Welcome to Mama Doesn't Tell Lies. It's the podcast series that's uplifting and real and gives you the truth bombs that you can handle while talking parenthood. Spawned from a desire to know more, while also wishing that someone who had done it all before had shared their stories, each episode we talk about something true and something real. This mama here, along with my guest hosts each episode, don't tell lies. So if you're a parent, want to be a parent, but just appreciate a giggle, strap yourself in for the ride and let's do it. On this episode...
Welcome to another episode of Mama Doesn't Tell Lies. I'm your host, Chloe Jeffers. Thank you so far for all the listens and supports of the show as it has launched. We are now four episodes in. And if you have subscribed on iTunes, don't forget to leave a five-star review like you would in any Uber. Please, we love likes and shares as well, so please share it. In today's episode, we are going to be talking to a wonderful mum who is a mother of two children, one of which you just heard in the background. Who's trying to play with our beautiful dog here. We're recording in the kitchen today under a sheet while my son sleeps and while Christy's five-year-old daughter plays in the lounge room. So for any interruptions, you know what it's like as a mum. Welcome to the show, Christy.
Thank you for having me, Chloe. I'm very excited to be here.
So Christy is a mum of two beautiful children to a guy I went to high school with. So Tim and I have known each other since we were 12, and I was very fortunate to that he chose so well in his life partner and chose you because we've become really good mates to the point where I was with MC at your wedding.
Yes, you were.
You are a HR manager for a big business, and while also being a mum to a five-year-old daughter and a six-year-old son, Sebastian. And that probably is the very first part of our story today to tell of your story of motherhood.
Yes.
You're a mum to two kids who are really close together.
Yeah, that was a shock. Mm. Definitely unplanned. We were one of those, I guess, lucky couples who didn't plan to have children and conceived very easily. Sebastian was a nice surprise. Tim and I had just gotten engaged. Mm. We're starting to plan for a wedding. And on the 1st of January 2012, whilst on holiday in Thailand, I felt something that was a bit different that I'd never experienced before. And our friend that we were with, who is Thai, went and got me a pregnancy test, and lo and behold, there was a baby that was made that was definitely unplanned, but definitely, definitely wanted. So yes, that was shock number one.
Mm.
And when Sebastian was 6 months old, we conceived again, our darling little girl, Andy. Definitely close together.
So your parenting journey, it's been quite challenging, I guess you could say. What is the one piece of advice, like we do ask every time on the show, what's the piece of advice, there's Andy, what's the piece of advice that you wish that someone who had done it all before had told you when you told people you were pregnant?
I think that the one thing, to be honest with you, I think that people could have told me anything that they wanted to and I would have taken it on board, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it will apply. But I just wish that someone probably had have said, you know, you're going to fuck up,
mm-hmm.
you are, but that's okay. And to not forget to practice self-care, because I did have postnatal depression with Sebastian. So to fall pregnant very quickly was a huge shock. And it really did rock my world. I think initially it was such a shock that, I did cry when I did the pregnancy test to find out that I was pregnant with Andy. But I didn't want to go back to the way that I was before, where, you know, I was very withdrawn and from my relationship and also just in general from people. So much so as I was putting myself in my bedroom and wasn't coming out when we had visitors when Sebastian was born. But
We will get into that. Yeah, we will definitely get into that. So it's a contrast to Kerry, who I spoke to in the last episode, who had about 12 months of fertility treatment before she got pregnant. And you spend your whole life trying not to get pregnant.
Yeah, that's
and then
true.
You sometimes are really fortunate that you fall pregnant very quickly. For others, it takes time, yeah. effort, energy, money. For you and Tim, it was a surprise. How do you psych yourself up for that? Because I see these women who, like, you read the stories about people who are going to the hospital with stomach pains and they're giving birth and they didn't know they were pregnant, so they haven't had that 9 months to prepare.
Yeah.
How do you mentally prepare for the act of parenthood?
Oh, God. Can anyone?
No.
Can anyone prepare for it? I guess, yeah, you do. People do give you advice and they say, oh, you know, you might expect this. Or I was very lucky in the sense that I had a very good pregnancy with Sebastian and with Andy. I wasn't sick at all. Mm-hmm. So other than that initial stages of being tired, and although my sense of smell was horrible because I used to smell everything. Teenage boys. Oh, my God. Teenage boys on trains.
Yuck. I remember before I knew I was pregnant with Hamish, and he was an unplanned but very welcomed surprise because we didn't think we'd be able to conceive, so we didn't want to put any pressure on ourselves. I remember Matt had come home from the pub and I was like, oh, my God, how many drinks do you have? How could you have driven home? He's like, I had, like, 2 beers 2 hours ago. And I was like, oh, that's weird.
You smell.
You stink like a brewery. And I feel like that's one thing, like your sense of smell. It's so bizarre, isn't it?
It's horrible.
Yeah, it's awful. Yeah. And the cab drivers, I mean, those 5-star Uber ratings I was talking about before. Oh, don't get in a cab when you're pregnant. Tell you what, that's awful.
Everything just is horrible. Everything. I remember I used to love the smell of bacon and onion cooking. Mm. And that smell used to make me gag when I was pregnant. I'm a vegetarian now, so that smell now also makes me gag, but for a different reason.
Yeah.
But yes, I think we kind of digressed then.
But, yeah.
But yeah, I guess that,
the shock
nothing
of
can prepare you.
No.
Nothing.
So you talked and you touched on very, something very raw and probably challenging and something that so many women face. So postnatal depression is, it's a really challenging, awful time when you're meant to be in the high of your life, when you've got this newborn child in your life that you just want to love and you want to do the best for, and your mind is not letting you do that. I suffered postnatal anxiety, which I talked about with Kerry, and you suffered from postnatal depression. Tell us about how you evolved from that and how you got out the other side.
It took a long time, I must admit. I also had prenatal depression, so depression in itself to me was not new. I did know the signs, but Tim is also very intuitive, and he, you know, was constantly asking me if I was okay. And while I do have my family around me, you know, my mum, you know, was a working parent, you know, parent herself when I had Sebastian, and my sister also worked. So they were my strongest support network. And also with Tim's mum. So I did have those people around, but you know, they're not living in, and you touched on with Deb in your podcast the other day about how, you know, you culturally we don't have that backup like, you know, other cultures might do. So for me, I had Tim, and Tim was very aware of my emotions and my heightened sensitivity, which everyone gets the baby blues. So when you first have a baby, you are feeling like that anyway. But I just couldn't come out of it. And we had as an avid Hawthorn supporter.
Go the Hawks.
Go the Hawks.
Yeah.
Sebastian was born 3 weeks before the grand final when we lost to Sydney, which was devastating in itself. But yeah, I could not come out of my bedroom. We had our friends over. There was probably about 15 of our friends that came over to watch the game. And I barricaded myself in the bedroom because I just didn't want to be around people. And
which is probably a big warning sign, and
yeah.
Your baby's a couple weeks old, and it can be quite confronting to admit that
yeah,
as I a parent so. To go, oh, I'm not feeling like I feel like I should.
Yeah.
But you don't also know what you're meant to feel at that time because they warn you about things like baby blues. And I remember I likened it initially to like tattoo remorse where it's to totally generalize and to make light of it. But when you want for a tattoo for a really long time and then you get it and you're like, oh my God, this is something that's on me forever.
Yeah.
Did I really want this? And I had that feeling when I brought Hamish home. I'd had a difficult labor and had been in hospital for a number of days and I was kind of like, this is what I wanted. I know I wanted it, but oh my God, I feel so blue. And then I realized it was the baby blues and a couple of days later I was okay and changed into another feeling. But so you identified pretty quickly. Did you admit that you needed some help quickly or did you just sort of get deeper before you got out?
The baby blues, I didn't know what to expect and how long that would go on for. So I was able to talk about it with Tim, but it did take, I think, a few weeks for me to really think, oh, okay, I feel like it shouldn't still be happening. I shouldn't still feel this way. And I wasn't necessarily removed from Sebastian emotionally. I wanted to be with him. I didn't want to be with anyone else.
Yeah.
I was still very attached to him. So I think that I was quite lucky in that sense because, you know, I have friends who have not had that experience with postnatal depression where they have removed themselves from being around the baby. But yes, I was completely opposite, but it was just my funk. I could not get out of the funk. And I had a friend who was like, you need to make sure you still get up and have your shower in the morning so that you know, at least still human, I guess. And I was trying to do that, but I couldn't. I just physically was just like...
Well, because you're battling the exhaustion. Battling the exhaustion of sleepless nights.
And being, he did not sleep.
And feeding and trying to find the axis point where you circle from, which has completely shifted. Dogs and babies, this is great. This is literally like mum
life.
This is life. This is how it works, guys. If you're if you're not a parent, sorry for the rude awakening. It's not all yummy mummies and Real Housewives of Melbourne. It's fitting everything in the day. How long was it before you sought professional help or did you seek professional help?
Yes, I did. So I think that it was probably around when we had the 6-week checkup. That Tim came with me. We sat down with the GP and had a very raw discussion about that. And again, because I had had depression before and I had also consulted with that doctor before, that, you know, it was not news to him. When I first fell pregnant with Sebastian, Tim and I were living in Perth and we had no family over there. I did have a few friends, but the prenatal depression that I experienced was because I was very isolated and I didn't have support, and Tim was still, you know, having a social life that I wasn't having because I was trying to make new friends, but new friends want to go out and drink and have fun. And when you're pregnant and you can't do those things, you kind of feel like you don't have a place.
Yeah.
So we came back to Melbourne to have Sebastian. And
I'm so glad you did too, because I feel like...
It would never have worked.
No. Well, I feel like you would have... We're going to touch on it in another episode. I feel like you would have eventually just found a way as a parent to make it work, because we're going to be talking to some parents in the country... we're incredibly isolated.
I think that Andy might be playing the drums.
No, she's on the xylophone. So you sought professional help. Did you get medicated?
I did.
Yep.
Yes.
And did it, how long did it take before the fog started to lift?
I would say that it was quite quick. Yeah. But in saying that, when I found out I was pregnant with Andy, I was still on medication, which is another reason why I was very shocked. And I guess I wouldn't call it sadness, but that surprise that was like really overwhelming. And I thought, oh my goodness, I'm still on medication. What is that going to do for having another baby? And then I love research. I am doing a master's in human resource management, so research and theory I love a lot. And of course I then went and researched what it could mean to be on medication whilst having a baby or you're cooking a baby.
Mm.
And all of these flags were coming up about autism and learning difficulties and all of these things. So I felt an immense pressure to make myself get off that medication.
That is such a burden to take on when you're already dealing with a six-month-old baby and the news that you're having another baby, and then the guilt that
yes.
what your mental health is doing could potentially impact that child.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that's a heavy load to carry.
Yes, it was not a lot of fun, I must admit. So I did actually try and come off my medication, which was not good. The way that it made me feel was awful. I actually got to a point where... Again, I was back in bed and not wanting to get out of bed and just having that overwhelming feeling of, nothing really. Mm. And again, removing myself from my partner. And then I did start to remove myself from Sebastian because I felt like I needed to give something to a baby that was, you know, brewing inside that I couldn't give because of, you know, again, my mental state that was being affected from the emotions and hormones that come with having a baby.
Totally.
Anyway,
who took over the lion's share of parenting then?
Yeah, that was Tim.
Yeah.
And again, I did have to rely a lot on our family to be around. So
it does take a village. Yeah,
it really does.
I mean, you only ever know what you have available to you. So if you don't have people and support around you, then I guess you adapt to the situation.
Yeah, that's true.
The good fortune of being from Melbourne probably meant that it worked in your favour to have the support. So was there any moments that you just had to laugh in that initial bit? Because I know that it probably – it feels a bit Debbie Downer, and it probably feels like there was a lot of sadness and frustration, loneliness, and just the hardness of it all. But was there any moments where there was like shit that went everywhere, or anything that you can remember where you're just like, oh, I've got to see the goodness in the funniness of this?
Yes. Well, the first thing that I think with particularly with having prenatal depression, which we'll touch on first, when I went into labour with Sebastian, that was fun. Because I laboured at home. I went into labour. Well, my waters broke. I had a very, very small break. Said to Tim, I think that I might be in labour. And we used to make this joke all the time about having a hysterical pregnancy, even up until the very end, because then Tim started saying I was having an hysterical labour because Sebastian was a week early. And I was like, no, there's something, my groin like just feels like achy, like a stitch. We lived not far from hospital, so we just called them and they said, look, just come in, all good. Anyway, I was there for a little bit, found out that I was in labour. They sent me home. Tim and I were watching The X Factor. I had a shower. I felt great. Like it was a lot easier to labour, and I'm very sorry for all of those people, including Chloe, who had a really hard labour. I was quite fortunate. I think I had all of my shit while I was pregnant.
Yeah,
so.
Totally. You got to, everyone gets your battles, yeah.
Something was on my side when I actually laboured, so that was nice, at least. So, yes, we were at home watching X Factor, not really paying attention to contractions. Tim was very excited watching one particular guy on X Factor, was meant to be recording my contractions, stopped somewhere along the way recording, and all of a sudden my contractions were about a minute and maybe 20 seconds apart.
Oh, my God.
And he was like, I'm like, I think that something's happening. Like, I literally knew that it was time. My body, I mean, you know, to anyone out there that has gone through that natural labour, you know when it's ready to start pushing that baby. So Tim called the hospital and they said, she probably should come in. And I transitioned whilst he was on the phone to the hospital. And they said, is that her? And he said, that's her. And they're like, she needs to come now, because that was literally the moment when I was going to push out Sebastian on the couch. But no, made it into the car, started pushing in the car instead. So that was fun. And we just had to laugh about it, because I was trying to walk through a car park to get into hospital, literally thinking that a baby was going to fall out from me. Obviously, he wasn't, because there's a lot more to it than that. But yes, looking back on that, it makes us laugh a lot. And also the moment that I found out I was pregnant with Andy, well, I touched before that, said that I, you know, did have a little cry, but that was out of shock more than anything. And then the memory of Tim just standing there with Sebastian on his hip and me being like, oh, my God, holding this pregnancy test, and he just started laughing. And I was like, this is not funny. This is not a funny situation. And he was like, babe, you know, people try so hard to have babies and we're going to have another one without even trying, which in itself became a massive joke because it was a bit like, you know, Tim looks at me and I fall pregnant. And that's kind of how it felt.
Yeah. So I was going to say 6 months in, I feel like, you know, I don't even know if my husband and I were even doing that at that stage.
Yeah, well, I was still breastfeeding. So that's the other thing. Yeah, here's some advice for you. Mm. Just because you're breastfeeding doesn't mean that you can't get pregnant, like a lot of people say, because, yeah, I was very, I don't have any more.
Oh, these are the bribes that we're trying to do to get Andy to sit. Would you like to watch some Bluey?
Yeah. Yeah. You go sit on the couch then. Come on, off you go. We won't be
We'll
long.
Take the wrapper. Okay. See ya.
Quickly. Yes, this is literally my life with Andy. She is very affectionate and just always wants to be near me, which is lovely, I must admit.
Yeah. So is it different the second time round with you? You've had a baby.
Mm-hmm.
You've gone through postnatal with Sebastian. You fall pregnant. Your labour was different. I know that.
Yeah, so Andy was breech transverse lie, so her head was stuck up under my ribs.
Mm. And that would have been comfortable.
Oh, yeah, that was lovely. Mm. And it's funny because the obstetrician that I saw when they tried to turn her, which if anyone out there has had to go through that, it's not very nice. They give you, well, first of all, they tried to turn her. It's on the outside, so they're actually kind of picking up your uterus from outside, trying to maneuver a baby. So, like, if you can imagine someone pushing down, like when you push on your baby when they're, you know, when you want them to move and you're like, if I want you to do something.
Yeah.
So they do that and it's really not very comfortable. And then they
More comfortable than giving birth naturally?
I think it's like just a really vomit-like feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just, yeah, it was very nauseating.
Yeah. How long does that process take?
Well, they only tried it 3 times.
Okay.
And each one it's quite quick. Yeah. It's just a matter of, you know, I guess trying to maneuver, you know, your organs and push everything out of the way to try and maneuver.
Again, things they don't teach you in birth class.
No.
At all.
And things that I've never heard anyone else go through. So I'm more than happy to share that story.
Yeah.
You know, when I talk about, having a natural labour with Sebastian without any, you know, medication, no painkillers because it was all too quick, to then, you know, finding out that I was going to have a cesarean with Andy, and which really upset me in itself, being that I did labour so well, I really wanted to be able to do that again. And, you know, I understand that a lot of women choose to have cesareans, and I think that, you know, everyone is entitled to do that. That my choice was that I wanted to have another natural labour. But when I found out that I had to have a cesarean, I was like, okay, I'm prepared, I can do this.
Did you have to make your peace with that, though?
I did. I really did.
And how far away from Andy's arrival did you discover that you had to have that cesarean?
I think it was quite – well, so I actually went into labour with Andy just before New Year's, 2013, because I had gastro and I went into labour. So I went to hospital and they stopped the labour, which was very lucky.
How many weeks was she then?
She was 36.
Okay.
36 or 35 and a half maybe.
Yep.
So, yeah, that was good. We were able to stop that, and then it was
isn't
probably
that even in itself that they could stop labour isn't a magical medical mystery a wonder.
It's pretty clever. They're just like they can bring it on.
Totally. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's my story. We haven't got around to that yet.
We'll get there. So, yes, so then I went to the Royal Women's to try and get them to turn her, which – again, that was a failure. But because I had already gone into labour and Sebastian was a week early and I had such a quick labour, there was a bit of concern that if I did go into labour naturally, that it could be, you know, quite complicated being her positioning, because there are some obstetricians that will deliver breech babies, but that's a feet first. That's a bum first, not a feet first.
Right.
Andy would have been a feet first, so they won't do that.
Yeah.
So they put me into hospital straight away. And they said, after trying to turn her, they said, go home, get your stuff. You're going to go to hospital until, you know, for at least a week, because we don't want to take, you know, we don't want to get her out yet. We didn't know what we were having. We didn't want to get the baby out yet, because I think that at that stage she was at about 37 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, we'll wait for a week and then we'll give
her
a cesarean.
Now, that's an interesting call. What the hell do you do when you've got a
15-month-old
baby and you're told to go to the hospital for a week? What did you do?
Oh, my God, it was so boring. Ugh. And I felt, again, I always felt guilty. Great pregnancy with Andy and didn't have that prenatal depression, but always felt guilty for Sebastian, because I felt like I was constantly having to, you know, look after myself, and I felt like he didn't get enough attention.
Heaven forbid a mother actually looking after herself over a baby. Yeah,
and this is what I said, you've got to practice the self-care.
Totally.
I don't think anyone ever told me. I think that as now people tell me all the time, you need to practice self-care. So I tell everyone, practice self-care.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to make time for yourself. You've got to make time for your relationship.
Mm.
But, yes, at the time that, you know, was another guilty thing, which, you know, bad mums, we've all seen the movie.
Oh, my God. So the mother's guilt. It's come up every time so far. There is no one I know that doesn't have the mother's guilt for something. Or something else, or this, or that. So you spent a week in hospital?
A week, that was a lot of fun.
But see, to me, a week where you're in hospital where everyone's doing everything else for you sounds like a week of bliss.
It was in that regard, but boring.
Yeah.
You're in hospital and, you know, Tim was working, and I did have some friends come and visit me, but being that I was still on the maternity ward, I was having to adhere to all of those hours, the same as all of the other women that were in there with their babies. Mm. So I'm in there with all of these women who have had their babies, and I'm just like, oh, this is so much fun. So I would walk around the ward and, you know, talk to all of the new mums, but myself just sitting around waiting effectively.
I had a woman the night I went into labour. I laboured heavily for a couple of hours, and then a shot of morphine stopped it all. And I was put on the ward with a woman who had been resting for 8 weeks in hospital and was getting transferred to a hospital locally because she was still only 28 weeks. So she was on full bed rest flat for 8 weeks, and she said, I've got another, 8 to 10 weeks of this ahead.
Okay, my week was a holiday
then. Yeah, totally. Yeah, you had a holiday for a week, someone else doing the cooking.
That sounds...
So then the labour with Andy, how'd it go? Or the cesarean. What are they call it? They don't call it a labour, do they? No, they just call it an arrival maybe.
Yeah, just a delivery.
Just a delivery, a delivery.
Quite traumatic, actually. Mm. So in comparison to having a natural labour where we had, a lovely bonding after Sebastian came out, was all, you know, quite rosy. Andy came out lifeless. She was breathing, but she was non-responsive. I didn't even know that I had a baby at that stage because there was no moment of the Lion King popping, Simba up to show the parents, the baby. There was none of that. It was only because the anaesthetist actually said to me, you've got a baby girl. And I was like, well, where is she? Why can't I hear her?
Mm.
And they said, they're just giving her a rub down. She's okay. She's breathing, but, you know, she's just a bit floppy. And that was just devastating hear because, you don't hear a baby cry, and that, you know, I'm sure that there are many parents out there who have had it a lot worse.
Yes.
However, at that time it was devastating to me. So I didn't even get to be with her. They took her away and she spent the first night in the neonatal ward. And the only time I got to see her was, I think she was probably about 4 hours old when I got to see her. So I didn't have that bonding experience with her. I didn't have skin to skin. Tim didn't get to have skin to skin. He was with her by her side while she was in her little humidity crib under lights. But you know, I was recovering and didn't get to see her, which was really, really devastating when you had been, you know, where I was before with Sebastian and that delightful, you know, stage after having a baby. And then there's just not being able to move and all the rest of it that comes with having a cesarean. But yes, anyway, she is the light of our life. She is a beautiful little girl. So, you know, we can't complain about having such a traumatic, you know, birth.
Did you mentally after that birth, because there is a dear friend of mine who had a pretty traumatic emergency cesarean and she hasn't recovered from it with the fear of having to do it again. Did you seek immediate help to make sure that you had the right support around you half after what had happened with Sebastian to make sure that as soon as you had Andy that you had the tools at your tool belt to make sure that you were mentally healthy?
Yes. Absolutely. And I think that
because, there's a little crocodile joining us.
Oh, my gosh, that is terrifying. If there was a camera here and anyone just saw what Andrew...
She's just shoved the crocodile.
Oh, my God, that is terrifying,
Andrew. I know, isn't it? Yeah, it's...
Goodness me.
She is the light of her life.
She's very cute. She's a super affectionate little thing. I don't want that in my face, though, darling.
No, I don't know if the crocodile's going to make it into the long-term Hall of Fame on Mummy Doesn't Tell Lies, but it is my son, one of his favourite toys that he tries to eat my arm with. So
Love it. But, yes, I did have a, you know, knowing exactly what it was like to go through with Sebastian, I was able to be on top of it straight away and I didn't have postnatal depression with Andy.
So amazing. That's such a positive story to have that.
Pretty exhausted.
Yeah, oh, my God. To have two children, at 15-month-old and a newborn, I don't know how you did it. And I don't know how you continue to be such an amazing mum and working mother when you've got a very full-on life, particularly in those early years when you're just drowning in nappies and chaos and breastfeeding and food and all that chaos. But, you know, you've come out the other side now, and now you've got a five-year-old and a six-year-old. You've got a preppy and you've got a kinder or a grade one and a kinder kid. Would you have it any other way?
To be very honest,
yeah.
If I had the choice, I would have chosen to have children further apart in age.
Yep.
But no, I wouldn't change what I have.
Yeah.
Because I have two beautiful children, and yeah, you can't change that.
No.
And I wouldn't want to change that. No. However,
if you were planning
to have children, and I am a planning person, but. Mm. I also don't really care to have a plan for those sorts of things.
I feel you're very agile and adaptive after circumstances. Maybe that's what the circumstances were thrown at you, that you were obviously designed that you would be fine and this would just be okay for you.
Yeah.
Totally.
But no, I wouldn't change it. No. They're amazing.
Yeah, they are. It's such a wonderful, crazy journey that you go on as a parent that you're literally like, oh my God, how did I ever do this? We could talk for hours and hours, and we will record another episode probably over a glass of wine when our children... Oh, you don't drink. Do you drink these days?
Yes.
Because you've changed your diet and your lifestyle.
Normal to, you know, vegetarian. But I do still treat myself to seafood, I must admit. So I'm what?
Pescatarian.
I find that such a weird concept, a pescatarian.
I know, you're like...
I just say vegetarian who eats fish sometimes.
Yeah. You are doing a great job as a mum, so keep up the hard work. The last thing we always ask on Mama Doesn't Tell Lies, what is the one thing that you would be... What would be the first thing you tell new parents now? Is it the self-care thing?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And you can't be everything to everyone because... We can't be like that in life.
Yeah.
So you just give your children the love that you can, but don't put the pressure on yourself to be everything. And you're going to make mistakes.
Mm.
And every parent, you know, mums and dads are going to make mistakes. And that's okay. And you don't have to blame yourself for anything because you're just doing what you can when you can. And don't forget to just, you know, take some time, just breathe. I still have to do that now. And sometimes I yell at my kids.
Totally. Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, that's okay.
And you can't beat yourself up over that. So
no. I'm sure that we were yelled at as kids and I don't feel like I remember it. I think there was one time that Mum yelled at me that I remember, but that was because she was going to... I'd been really naughty, but of all my life, I remember once in however many years. I think that's pretty good. And yeah. With the beautiful sounds of your daughter's xylophone playing to play us out on this episode of Mama Doesn't Tell Lies, Christy Ireland, thank you for joining us in the studio
under this sheet. Loving the sheet.
With all the noise. Christy will be back to host another episode with us very soon. This has been Mama Doesn't Tell Lies. The blog is at mdtl.home.blog. It is the place where you can find out more about the show, and all episodes will be put up there. Thank you again for listening, and we'll catch you on the next episode soon. You've been listening to Mama Doesn't Tell Lies, the podcast sharing nothing but realness about parenting and kiddlywinks. Produced and hosted by me, Chloe Jeffers. Audio editing and production by Alice Miller. True stories by those willing to share.